Sisters and brothers, as we all know, the past 4 years have presented some tough challenges for the labor movement. Faced with one of the most hostile governments in Canada, I would suggest even in North America. It is good to know we have a committed and tireless leader to protect workers' rights and build the labor movement in this province. First elected president in 1999, Brother Jim Sinclair has been active in the labor movement for well over, and I'm being generous here, Jim, 20 years. He is a skilled negotiator and faced difficult employers while serving as vice president of the United Fishermen and Allied Workers Union. Jim is an articulate, outspoken advocate for workers at a time when the dominant voices in our province are conservative. Brothers and sisters, to open our 48th annual convention, please welcome our president of the Federation of Labor, Brother Jim Sinclair.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here, isn't it? And Larry Campbell, I kind of got a second emotion. I think if we were to run this province, we'd do a hell of a lot better job than the people doing it today. That's what we got to do. Yeah, big labor. Well, I feel big today, I'll tell you. And I've been eating really fast. I want to be 300 pounds by that election so we get it right, eh? But you know, we are a great movement, a wonderful movement, a truly powerful voice for working people in this province. And let's be very clear about who we are and what we do. We make no apologies to anyone for earning a decent living. We make no apologies. No apologies for fighting for health care for our families or for education for our kids. We make no apologies to standing up to employers or standing up for our communities. And let me be absolutely clear, we make no apologies for standing up to bullies who masquerade as politicians in our province. And I know we hear it. We hear it all the time. Well, unions were good back then. CEOs saying, oh, we should go away. Politicians who say the problem's the labor movement. They prefer us to fold up our tents and go away. Anybody in this room ready to pack it in? Sorry, I didn't hear that. Absolutely right, because we're here at the largest convention of the Federation in many years, and because we're growing and because we make the difference in this province. Before I go any further, I want to thank Sister Shira for her tireless work on behalf of the Federation. Unions make the difference, but Angie makes the difference count. Thank you, Angie. I also want to thank the Federation officers who are here today in front of you. They make all the difference daily in this province, leading their unions, but also sitting down and working together to solve the problems of the labor movement and to find the unity we need. Thank you on behalf of all of us. And as you all know, it's the workers that make it all work. And at the Federation, it's a very small group of incredibly dedicated staff who are there to answer those phones and take all the calls and organize this labor movement. And on behalf of you, I want to thank the staff of the Federation for the job that they've done. And I want to thank you. I want to thank every one of you in this room. And I also want to thank your families, because I know that when you're here, other people in your families are doing double duty to make sure the family works. I want to thank you and remind you that this Federation has never been bigger than it is today, and that's something to celebrate. We have more members today in this Federation than in its history, and we need every one of you. So thanks very much. How many first-time delegates are here? Wow, that's impressive. Thank you very much. And by the way, I have a memory of every one of you, and I expect to see you at the microphones this week. And we know you can do that. It's so important that there are these new faces in this movement, that we continue to grow and to build for the next generation. We need to celebrate our past, though, as well as our future. And that's why I'm so pleased that our retired members are leading the way to build a Labor Heritage Center in British Columbia, and we'll be learning about that this week. I want to talk to you about a picket line I was on last week. It's a line that says a lot about things. A lot about our province, a lot about our struggle, a lot about respect, and a lot about how those that have too much care so little about the rest of us. The picket line is in West Vancouver, BC's wealthiest community, at the gates of the Hollyburn Country Club. Walking the line are mostly young people, earning about $11 an hour. They are demanding a modest wage increase, cost of living, just to stay up with where we're going. But as one young worker said to me, she was walking the line because she wanted respect. Some of those young people are with us today. I want you to join me in welcoming them in the gallery. Please stand up from the Hollyburn Country Club. You're doing a fine job over there. Of course, on a picket line, there's always somebody on the other side. And in this case, it's the wealthiest people in British Columbia. Over 7,000 country club members who paid $25,000 each just to get in the door. What do the wealthiest people in the province say to these young workers? Forget modest pay increases. They say we can't afford any pay increases. Shame is right. And adding insult to injury, the club is so poor they have to ask for sick days back from people. And finally, at the root of it all, they want to rebuild their club with all of their millions, but it might take longer than 3 months, and the layoff language in the collective agreement only calls for layoffs to last 3 months, after which you have no recall rights. So they don't want to grant people the right to be recalled after the place is rebuilt. They're so poor they can't do this? Well, how poor are they? Last year, 73 new members joined Hollyburn, dumping in another $2 million to club coffers. Club members, are they struggling? Well, you can ask William Newell. He's on the list of the top 100. He's a typical corporate executive. He last year got a measly 26% wage increase, so he got himself up to about $660,000 a year. But what about his fellow club member, Ralph McRae, whose 64% wage increase let him take over just $600,000 last year? It was a tough year. Let me say to the workers in the audience and to the workers there, it doesn't matter how much money the other side has or how much greed they celebrate, we'll be with you and we'll be with you until you win a decent wage increase and the respect that you deserve. And yes, Gordon Campbell, we admit it. In front of all the media, we admit it. The economy is booming for CEOs. CEOs of the top 100 publicly traded companies last year got an average pay increase of 36%. I'll take that, okay? You'll take that. Shame. Of course, that wasn't quite the banner year they were looking for. The next year, things got really booming because they got a pay increase of 51%. You don't read that in the newspaper, do you? Because they don't want to talk about what's happening in this province. Just like the Hollyburn strike, this is a story about the divide. Over the last 3 years, our average annual wage grew by 3.9%. Too bad inflation grew by 6.7%. If it feels like you're falling behind, it's true. It's because you are. That's what's making the divide between the rich and the poor bigger in British Columbia. And it's not just workers that are feeling the pain. The latest report on child poverty shows that nearly 20% of BC children now live in poverty. The food bank. A weather vane of how poor people are doing, the latest statistics show it's up 16% from a year ago. Why? Because this government is making it tougher for families to survive. It's pushing down wages, firing employees, and robbing the poor of minimal assistance. Whether it's tax cuts for the wealthy, pink slips for workers, cuts to child care, cuts to women's centers, cuts benefiting the poor, or trashing the eight-hour day, it's the same old plan. Transfer millions of dollars to your wealthy friends. Why do they hate us so much? Why do they talk about it in such a way? They call us big labor like it's some kind of insult, like it's a disease somebody has. Why do they privatize out and contract our work? Why do they make it harder to organize? The answer is actually very simple. Because we stand in their way, and we stand up for working people in British Columbia, and we're very proud of that. And we're going to keep doing that in this province, no matter what they call us. And believe me, we've been standing up all across this province. In the public sector, the Campbell government has billion-dollar contracting out plans to seize government services put in the hands of corporations. Corporations like TELUS, who are now going to handle all of the payroll for public sector workers. Ask the TWU members over here, wherever you are, the TWU members about TELUS and their downsizing and firing workers and how hard their employer is trying to avoid bargaining. Is this a good employer for us? Thank you, TELUS, and the TWU. American companies like Maximus, up to the trough to take over MSP services, so access to our medical records can, you know, the FBI can have access to them. But, you know, people are fighting that. The BCGU is leading the attack because we know fundamentally that the thing that separates us from this government is we actually believe in British Columbia, and we believe British Columbia workers can do all of these jobs in our own province. Imagine the fight that ferry workers put up and the people who work in the shipyards. Imagine taking the ferries over to Germany to build them there. Shame on them. We can build this. There is no respect for British Columbians. They want to sell our public assets. They want to get rid of things we care about. One-third of BC Hydro going to Accenture, that company that ran off the Bahamas to get out of the taxes in the United States. They have trashed those things we believe in. They don't believe in us. BC Rail. BC Rail, we fought that hard, sisters and brothers, up and down that line. If you live up and down that line, you know we were there fighting against the sale of this railway. This profitable public asset built by the well-known socialist WAC Bennett provided hundreds of million dollars to the Treasury, a vital passenger service to the interior, was a backbone of resource-dependent communities. What was Campbell's plan? Sell it to CN Rail. Oh yeah, I said sell it. That's not actually what happened, was it? We just leased it to them for almost no money, for just 990 years. So our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren could have a decision about what happens to it. You know, and we know what the result of that is, all up and down the line. People in every one of those communities are being laid off. Last Friday in Squamish, 100 BC Rail employees were given the pink slips. We know those jobs are disappearing. And you know, it'd be one thing to say, well, we've lost the battle, it's all over, but let me tell you, what we did was build a movement so people won't forget what happened to BC Rail. With the help of rail unions, we organized an incredible support of that rail system up and down the line. That system includes mayors, city councillors, small businesses, community folks. Our unity is simple. Gordon Campbell lied to British Columbians, and we won't forget that when we mark our ballot in May. Because those BC Liberals who live in those ridings better find another job, because they're not going to have one when we're finished with them. And it's not just people in rural British Columbia that have seen their transportation system sold off. Here in the Lower Mainland, the Liberals in Victoria have been pushing a privatized investor to operate and maintain one of the basic new developments in the transportation system, the RAV line. Sisters and brothers, we have stood firm from the beginning. The RAV line should be run by public sector workers and the public, because we can't afford the private sector to run that. It belongs to us. It is. Privatization is one of the most critical issues facing this province. It is going to be, in our opinion, one of the most critical issues facing us this May. Do we want a British Columbia that is there for all of us, or do we want one that's sold to the wealthy? Coastal communities are also feeling the sting from privatization. We barely left the convention last year when the ferry workers hit the bricks and they shut down the ferry system. Why? Because they stood in the way of Campbell's privatization plans for the ferry service in coastal British Columbia. Yes, they do deserve an applause. And when they were ordered back to work, what happened? They shut down the whole ferry system. And that's what they got from this government. And in the end, it was a tough decision to make. And they went back to work and forced arbitration and didn't get a contract shoved down their throats. And at the end of the day, protected many, many jobs. And several months later, The same thing at Dee's Dock. They were also on the line, walking the picket line. That's where they maintained the ferries. We used hot edicts to stop other workers from repairing those ferries, and a settlement was reached. But that story goes across the province. Woodworkers put up picket lines on the coast in their fight against contracting out. The Ranpak workers just ended a long and really tough strike where the employer wanted to break the pulp industry pattern. Steelworkers at Modern Auto have been there for 2.5 years. And I talked to them recently. They're not going anywhere because they're refusing to accept concessions. Keepy workers in Nelson walked the line for more than 2 months after the city decided that job security wasn't good enough anymore and that should be stripped from their contracts. The Canadian Merchant Service Guild members tied up the tugs to demand a fair collective agreement and won that strike after they started shutting down the coast. All these strikes and others, they were tough. And in almost every case, we're fighting some new form of contracting out or contract stripping. Your federation has been involved in every one of these disputes. We organized pressure tactics like hot edicts. We built strike support at the picket lines, and we worked in the community. We put solidarity in action to ensure that the fight with one was a fight with all of us. And that is the key to our movement. And sisters and brothers, that solidarity was never, never more important than it was last spring when healthcare workers took job action. It was a fight over more than collective bargaining. It was a government bent on eliminating collective bargaining in the public sector and busting the unions there. Using Bill 37, a vicious piece of legislation, the provincial government ordered legally striking union members back to work, retroactively rolled back healthcare workers' wages, and opened the door to unlimited contracting out of their work again. This was a legislative attack designed not only to further privatize our healthcare system, but also attack the very existence of unions, especially the HEU. On Wednesday night, when that legislation was rammed through, Gordon Campbell thought he had won the battle. Sure, there'd be some opposition, but he would win the day. And he announced that he would not back down and would not talk to unions while they were on strike. Sisters and brothers, he was wrong. He was wrong because healthcare workers got together and made the first decision that set us on our course. Healthcare workers got together and said, you can pass the law, but we're not going back to work. We're staying out and fighting this government and this legislation. And that was the critical first step of this battle. We started meeting as a federation before this happened, but from Wednesday on, there was a meeting every day at the federation office. We put together a plan of province-wide escalating job action, which would just show this government how serious we were. On Friday, workers were responding across the province. Sawmills and plywood mills started to shut down. Hydro workers walked off the job and joined picket lines. Thousands upon thousands of municipal and school board and workers walked off the job. BC Rail, by the weekend, BC Rail was shut down. Port facilities were coming down. Smelters weren't far behind. We were turning up the heat, and the government knew it. We weren't only sending a message to the bosses, not just the healthcare bosses, but we were sending the message to bosses of big industry. You're not getting away with this. Go tell your friends in government you've got a problem. We made sure they knew they were not just taking on healthcare workers, that you're taking on the labor movement. That's what was necessary to push back this government, and that's what happened. Oh, yes, ending this dispute was tough. Yes, thousands of jobs were saved. And they were really saved. And $25 million was won for those already displaced, and there was no retroactivity or retribution against healthcare workers for their illegal actions. The HU's provincial executive made a tough decision on Sunday night. They thought not only about how far they had gone and what they had won, but also about the sacrifices of thousands of BC workers. Healthcare workers had set the bar higher, and the labor movement had responded. Let me say, for those of you who had organized to go out on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, thank you, thank you, thank you. Your commitment to take action, absolutely. That's right. Thank you, everybody. That's right. Let's be clear, there's lots of rhetoric in this movement, but when we said that more was going to come, they knew more was going to come. I want to thank you so much for what you've done. Sure, there's going to be a lot of debate about what happened at this dispute and how we could have done a better job. We've all thought about that. We've all thought about how we can be more mobilized, how communications on the last day were not right, and we have things to worry about. Let's have the debate. It makes us stronger. But it should never diminish the solidarity shown by this proud movement on those days and the solidarity with healthcare workers. The question isn't how far we should have gone the last time, but how far we're going to have to go the next time, sisters and brothers. Because let's be clear, there will be a next time. And let us make this message of this convention to Gordon Campbell and the Liberals and to employers in this province that if you go out and take on another one of our affiliates and try to take them apart, we will all be standing shoulder to shoulder with them and you will not get away with it. And also, let's be clear, we're fighting to stop privatization as if it works somehow for them. Do hospitals, are they cleaner?
No.
Hospitals are dirty. Patients are mistreated. Surgery waiting lists are skyrocketing. Hospitals and long-term care beds have been cut. The list goes on and on and on. They are making a mess of the health care we all depend upon. It's not just firing the workers that do the job and disrespecting them. It's not putting in the proper resources. It's privatizing the services in other ways as well. At a recent meeting, a young organizer stood up and talked about why he was fighting to defeat Gordon Campbell. He talked about his grandparents that had been together for over 50 years in a Burnaby long-term care facility. And now, you know what? Because of the change in the system, the grandfather has to move to Langley. Shame. Absolutely right. This is not how we intend to treat our seniors in this province. The fight for decades to win public, the fight to win public health care took a long time. That's the reason Gordon Campbell has the lowest popularity and Thomas Douglas is the most popular person in this country. But let's be clear, in this room today, we got it right. We know it takes a hell of a public health care system to make this a healthy province, and we're going to continue to fight to stop the privatization of all health care services in this province so every British Columbia has a right to a decent health care in this province. I know it feels like you're picking on health care workers someday, but this kind of monster of privatization goes right across the board. In education recently, we revealed a secret school board memo. What did that say? It said that they wanted to contact out the services and amalgamate the school board services. What's so scary about the plan is that in this document, even the trustees admit, and I'll quote, this is what they say about contracting out, even though they want to do it. Contracting out is not a panacea that has lured many organizations, into a position where they have lost control of standards and have no ability to recapture control. They go on to say what we say. Contractors make money by lowering wages and increasing workloads to a point where the quality of service suffers. That's what we know. Now they're saying the same thing. But the document also reveals why are they looking at doing this very thing they think is wrong? Maybe this says it all. There is little argument that resources within the education sector have been eroded to a level where the provision of quality education is at best difficult and at worst, virtually impossible. These are the trustees in charge of our education, admitting that Gordon Campbell has robbed this education system of the funding that's necessary to make it possible to have an education for our kids. Let us be very clear. Let us understand that these trustees have it backwards. It's not about going out and taking the money out of the pockets from the people who deliver the services that's going to save the system. It's going to Gordon Campbell and the Liberals and saying, put the money in that's necessary to run the system. That's what this is all about. It's about 114 schools closed down. It's about 3,000 teachers laid off. It's about fewer teachers, less student support, and not enough textbooks to go around. But you know, it's a battle that goes on. And last year at this convention, we heard from the teachers about their college. We heard how the government had ripped up the rules and had taken it over, and it was a democratic college before. They weren't allowing teachers to be on it. And you know, I got to say that this year I can stand here and honestly say that the education minister, Christy Clark, who didn't want to bend on that issue, I'm pleased to say she's gone. And I'm really pleased to say that the government bent on this issue, and now there's a majority of elected teachers on that school, on the college, where they belong. And thank you very much for putting up that fight. Congratulations. Not all of us can go to university or college. Some of us have kids that don't want to go there or can't go there for whatever reason. Or maybe they want another career. Maybe they want to get a trade. Maybe they want to be one of the thousands and thousands of British Columbians who got a trade. We know that investing in BC's youth is the only way to go forward. They don't seem to know that in Victoria. We used to have a system. It was called ITAC. It was built by Labour, government employers, and post-secondary institutes. They wiped it out and replaced it with a deregulated model. Industry Training Authority, they call it. How is that new model working? Well, again, these documents keep coming our way. The ITA document last week had some very interesting admissions in it. The ITA admits they lack the internal capacity to develop, implement, or maintain programs for our young people. Well, you know, duh, if you cut the staff from 140 to 18, what do you think happens? You can't do your jobs anymore. And you know, the other thing goes on to admit, there's no coherent provincial picture of training supply and demand. Aren't these the people supposed to be in charge of it? And they don't know what's going on. Sisters and brothers, what's their answer? What's the employer's answer? Water down the standards, lift the retirement age, and steal the skilled trades we can't do in British Columbia from other countries that can't afford it. This is a shameful example. But I also want to say that we have an alternative. And if they choose to listen to Labour Movement that we released last week, which you'll be discussing, and you know what this says? This says that if we put our minds to it, we have the answers. There's 5,000 apprentices in the union system right now, and that if they put the money in and let us at the table, we will not only have 15,000 apprentices, we will double that number to 30,000 the next 4 years. That's a dream we can get behind. It's not just our skills they don't respect. They actually have, as you heard earlier, no respect for our lives. 219 workers died last year. 5,292 workers have permanent injuries. 9 young workers were killed between the ages of 15 and 24 were killed on the job in British Columbia. This is not anything to celebrate. This is shameful. All of it under the guise, this is what we're living with at the WCB. New flexible regulations. Earlier this year, we revealed leaked correspondence showing the BC Liberal plans, no surprises, to strip WCB of enforcement capacity in the oil and gas industry, to turn it over to another agency. And that's what they wanted to do in one of our most dangerous industries in the province. A month later, when a high-placed WCB official was asked, what happened to this plan? He responded sarcastically, well, I guess the Federation put an end to that. You bet we did. Because we know protecting workers is not red tape, it's a basic right. And we are fighting back. We are doing an incredible job at the Federation. We have trained in the last 24 months over 2,000 OH&S activists, 2,000 people who now know more about their rights. We have trained close to 30 young people who came and spent a week to be instructors in health and safety programs in our schools and to talk about why unions are important. And let me tell you, I'm really excited to say that in the last year, 7 months, we've reached out to over 10,000 high school students in this province, and in the next year, we're going to double that number. Thank you to those young people who are doing that job for us. More and more, this government sides with employers. You know, let's be clear, we can't just judge the success of the labor movement by the number of people who have won decent wages and benefits and respect on the job. We must also truthfully judge ourselves by the number of workers who do not have those decent wages and benefits. Vulnerable workers who face virtually no employment standards right now. Vulnerable workers who want to organize a union to find out the labor code has been changed so employers can get involved in telling them what to do and threatening them. It's an enormous struggle we're facing in this province to keep growing, because if we don't grow, we go backwards. And I want to take a moment just to thank all the people who call themselves organizers in this union movement and go out there and organize those new workers. Thank you very much for the job you do. I want to turn my mind to the future and our thoughts to the future here. We can do better. We must do better. We can build a province where everyone matters, where rights have meaning, where disparity is extinct. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a hell of a lot of work. Are we up for the fight? Let's hear that again. Are we up for this fight, folks? Let's be clear what we're up against. They've got millions of dollars. They're spending taxpayer ads. They're threatening people. They've got more corporate bucks than you can imagine. But you know, a reporter said to me today, okay, Jim, how big's your war chest? This is always the big question, you know. And I looked her in the eye and I said, well, our war chest is really big. It has 500,000 people in it. And that's our war chest, sisters and brothers. Pundits would believe, have us believe, we can't beat Gordon Campbell. 77-2, it's an impossibility. I have three words for them. Surrey Panorama Ridge. Two more words. Jagrup Brah, who did a great job as being our new NDP MLA. Thank you for running and doing that job. You know, it wasn't like they ran away from the fight. They spent, I can't imagine how much taxpayers' dollars trying to win this one. They even offered to build a whole new bridge. The employers ran their ads. They did a lot of things. But you know, it wasn't good enough. They were soundly defeated by a grassroots campaign that knew that Gordon Campbell isn't working for British Columbians. After the results poured in, did he acknowledge why people won't vote for him? No. He played the classic blame game. He tried to blame the Indo-Canadian community. And when that didn't work, he went back to blaming big labor. Now, I have to admit, we were active in Surrey. And why the hell wouldn't we be? There are more than 4,000 trade unionists, folks, that live in that riding. And let me just say, so there's no illusions, we're going to be even more active in the coming weeks and months. Because we're going to reach out to every one of our members and make sure they understand the choices facing British Columbia. That they understand the connection between a ballot box and a paycheck. And between their communities and safety and education and healthcare. Yes, we're guilty of being political. But also in this room, let me say, we're not political to give up the power of the labor movement or to give it to anybody else, no matter what political party. We're political so working people have more power and better lives, more power to organize, more power to bargain, more power to ensure a decent public education system and a public healthcare system, more power to demand safe workplaces and respect from employers. More chance so that our children's dreams of better lives and better places have equal billing with the dreams of the wealthy. We are launching the largest grassroots campaign in the labor movement's history. It's called Count Me In. Your federation's political action strategy will be put to the test. It's not based on money. It's based on people. And we can win the next election if we dare to win the next election. I was in Princeton the other week at a meeting. We sat down with local activists, about 10 or 12 of us for dinner in Princeton, talked about the election. We went off to a public meeting afterwards. There was 50 or 60 people there. Half of them signed up to join up with a campaign to defeat the Liberals. The challenge for the labor movement and for the activists is to open the door to let those people in, because people do want to become part of this fight, and they do want to be successful. And let's be very clear, we're running to win in Princeton and other communities, so we will organize those committees. From Prince Rupert to Fernie, Nanaimo to Fort St. James, and every community, inter-union committees will be organized. You all got a dot. That dot says you're going to a meeting. We're going to work together like we never have before, because we have to mobilize our members to win this election. It just has to be done. And the reporter said to me today, but after Carol James wins, I say, well, that's a good start. After Carol James wins, is your battle over? And I said, absolutely not. Let's just say if we defeat the Liberals and elect Carol James, then all that work we're doing in the next 3 or 4 months is going to continue, and if it doesn't, we've made a serious mistake. The folks on House Street, the privatizers, all those folks aren't going away. We need to be organized and active no matter what government's in power to demand labor agendas get implemented. And that's our challenge. I want to end by thanking you for the confidence you've shown in the Federation, for the struggle you've put up in the last year, and also for the struggle we're going to put up in the next year. Our job this week is to leave this convention after vigorous debates, united, acting in solidarity, and ready to take action. I know we can do that. I know we can be proud of our movement, and we'll continue to be, and that we'll get the job done. Thank you very much.